This is Trainer Talk on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
But it was all for Chuck McGee. Super Saver wins the Derby for Top Pletcher.
The Salt will give trainer Steve Asmussen career win number 6,000.
It was all have another for Doug O'Neill.
Oxbow and D-Wayne Lucas. Trainer D-Wayne Lucas, a sixth win.
And Al's Rosie is going to give trainer Gary Contessa his 2,000th career win.
And dialed in, never got to them. It was Animal Kingdom for Graham Motion.
Steve Hobby with career victory number 1,000 at Oaklawn.
Presented by Basic Tipton. Now, here's Mike Penna.
Hello again, everyone, and welcome to the show Trainers Listen To. It is Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Mike Penna, Baron of the Backstretch, in our Lexington, Kentucky studios, and welcoming everyone joining us throughout North America on Sirius 220 XM Channel 206, and of course, everyone tuning in worldwide with our live streaming on your computer, on your smartphone, or on your tablet. It's all there for you at horseracingradio.net. Every week I have the opportunity to visit with the trainers that make our sport a success, and there are so many great stories behind each and every one of them, how they got started, how they got to where they are today. And one of those trainers is trainer Derek Ryan, who joins me on Trainer Talk here this evening. The 48-year-old trainer was born in Tipperary, Ireland, and has trained more than 540 career winners with purse earnings of more than $14 million. And Derek, with me here on Trainer Talk this evening. Derek, appreciate the time.
No problem. How are you?
Doing very well, my friend. And, you know, like so many trainers, you kind of did things your own way. You didn't grow up in the horse industry, but you caught the horse bug as a young child when you began riding ponies. Tell me about that.
Yeah, it's big sport in Ireland. Every kid is gonna ride ponies or wants to be a jockey or a golfer or a soccer player.
Well, there's been several.
One of the many sports we have over there.
Yeah, there's been several top golfers and several top trainers to come out of Ireland, and you're just kind of following in their footsteps, I guess.
Yeah, trying anyway.
So take me back to the beginning. Take me back to getting hooked on the sport. How did it happen?
I have next-door neighbors of mine have been in the horse business, for years. And rode show jumping, hunting, all the usual stuff you do as a kid.
And it just went from there?
And it went from there. Wanted to be a jockey. Idolized the likes of Lester Piggott and was either horses or golf. Lester Piggott and Seve Ballester are my two favorite sports people.
Did you ever get an opportunity to meet either one of them?
I met Lester Piggott a few times. I worked for Tommy Stack, and he used to ride a lot of horses for him at the time.
So what happened with the riding career? How come that didn't get off the ground?
Got too big and wasn't good enough, and realized it very quickly.
Did you figure that out for yourself, or did you need somebody to tell you?
No, I figured it out for myself, and when I hit the ground a few times in steeplechase races, figured it was time to find another avenue in the business.
So why horse training?
I don't know. I just sort of happened, really. You know, I traveled around Europe quite a bit when I was young. Worked in England, France, Switzerland, and then came to the States. And then I figured I'd go from here to Australia and then Hong Kong. And I never left the States.
Wow, that's incredible. What year did you move to the United States?
88, I think it was.
So you were what, maybe in your young, early 20s?
Nine, just turned 20.
All right. What was that like coming here as a young man?
I used to love to travel. So, I mean, I had just come back from France and spent another 6 months back in Ireland. And then I got an opportunity to come to New York and on a stud farm in upstate New York. And quickly realized stud farm, life wasn't for me. And I got in a car, went to Belmont, and went from there.
Wow. So you basically just started knocking on doors and saying, hey, I want to get into this. I want to be a trainer.
Yeah, the first time I went to Belmont, I didn't know anybody. I knew a few names, and I think we got thrown out the first day. I came back in through the fence the next day and went from there, you know.
Well, you mentioned idolizing Lester Piggott in terms of the jockey side of things. How about trainers? Did you have a trainer you looked up to?
Well, everyone over there would have the greatest had to be Vincent O'Brien.
What was it about him that made him so special?
His whole story. He was, you know, he started small and he was very successful, like the cash a bet on horses, and you know, he was very good at it, and he did everything in the sport. He was so successful at it.
Who gave you your first big break when you came here and started knocking on doors at Belmont?
I got a few freelance few horses for David Whiteley, and then I came down to Jersey, and being young, I could basically wasn't too many horses I couldn't gallop, so started getting on a few freelance, and anybody who had a horse that nobody could gallop, I would venture over there and get on it, you know, went from there.
You know, it seems like everybody that started like that started galloping horses and then moved into training them, has a favorite story or a favorite horse that they had the chance to gallop when they were just getting started. How about you?
Well, when I my last job in Ireland, I worked for a guy called Tommy Stack, and he had a filly called Kostroma, and she was a runoff, and she ended up coming over to Charlie Whittingham. I think it was Charlie Whittingham, and she ended up being a champion over here in North America. She was a real deal, but she was a really tough filly to train or gallop.
Do you think that, I mean, all of that experience working overseas and then coming over here to the United States and being around the different aspects of the game, you mentioned working at a stud farm and then now going there and galloping horses and training horses, you dabbled in riding horses. Do you find that all that experience, Derek, is helping you now when you're training horses?
Well, everywhere you go, I mean, you try to learn a little bit as you go along, and if you pick up a little bit from every one of them, you know, it's not going to hurt you. And, hopefully I learned a little bit somewhere along the line, some good, some bad. I worked some really good trainers, some really bad ones, but, you know, that's part of the business.
Talking with trainer Derek Ryan on Trainer Talk presented by Fasig Tipton on the Horse Racing Radio Network. You opened your public stable in, what, 96? Is that right?
Well, yeah, I think it was 96 at the time back then. I had a partner, a couple pieces of horses with Orsino. I used to get on horses for Joe Orsino, and he just picked up an outfit, and he was going to Aqueduct for the winter, and I don't really like the cold weather too much after spending a few winters in Miami, and he took one horse, and I took the other. I went south, and he stayed in New York, and the horse was a horse called Moose the Goose.
Moose the Goose.
And he, first time I run him, he went.
Wow. Wow, and you were off and running after that.
Yeah. I mean, I always enjoyed the training part of it.
I guess that's why you spend most of your winters now in Tampa Bay and you know, mostly down in Florida because of the warmer weather.
Yeah, I mean, Tampa is a great place. It's winter. Financially, it's a little tough at times. The money isn't as big as other tracks, but so far, I always come out here in good shape. My horses always come out here in good shape, and we make up for down the road.
Tell me about those early days when you were just getting started on your own. Was it difficult?
Yeah, but I was able to do a lot of it myself. You know, like I only had like two or three horses, and you can do most of the work yourself, you know. So we figured if it works, it works, and if it doesn't, well, we'll find something else to do.
Yeah, but you had a little different approach, didn't you? You kind of put your money where your mouth is, so to speak.
Yeah, unfortunately, I am. Unfortunately, I'm putting up a lot of my own money, but so far it's worked out. I mean, there's only so many big clients out there, and, you know, we'll say there's only certain guys get all the bigger clients, but that's part of the business, and you got to accept that, you know?
Yeah.
And if you think you know what you're doing and you're not afraid to put your money up, well, then you'll be all right.
Yeah, and of course, what I'm talking about is the fact that you used to purchase your own shares in many of the horses that you had in your barn. And I can't think, Derek, of a better way to show confidence in yourself and your ability than by saying, hey, you know what, guys? I'm in this with you.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, like, even now I own probably half my barn or a piece of nearly everything in the barn. And if it works out, it works out. And if it doesn't, well, you're going to lose money just as well as your clients.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it's a different approach, but I don't think it's a bad approach by any stretch of the imagination, other than the fact that you are putting up your own money. But I'm sure that a lot of the owners really respect that, don't they?
Yeah, exactly. It's like even the good horse I had, Musket Man, I originally owned half of him before he ever even ran, and we sold 90% of him to his new owner. Looking back, you wish he didn't, because he made $1 million, but that's part of the business. If you get an offer, you got to sell him, you know, and it worked out good, because if he didn't buy him, he probably wouldn't have been in my barn after his first start anyway. We would have sold him to the first one to come with money.
Yeah, yeah. That Musket Man story is a really cool story. Tell me about Musket Man.
Well, how I ended up with him is I had his sister. I bought her off the same consigner and the same original owner as a two-year-old in the April. I think she bought her in the June sale in Ocala. We named her Casablanca Babe. She ended up winning. What did I win with her? Three or four races, and Sorcino claimed her off me. How's that? For $50,000, and I only bought her for like $20, so that was a nice profit. And I knew the consigner, Scott Bershard, and he told me he had a half brother up there, and I went and looked at him in the farm, and then I went to the sale, and he had a little bit of a high reserve on him, and I ended up buying his piece out, and me and Vic Carlson were the original owners, and he'd been working really good, and I had just picked up a few horses for Eric Fine at the time, and I told him I had a serious horse, and we came down and we worked out a deal, and that's how the deal went. That's how Eric ended up with the horse.
Yeah, and some people would have said, you know what, Musket Man, he's a son of Yanaguska, he's out of a fortunate prospect mare, what is this horse going to do? But you always said, hey, this horse is a runner, and you stuck to your guns, and it paid off.
Yeah, I mean, good horses will do anything, you know. I mean, he was just a classy horse. Everyone said he doesn't have the pedigree to go long, or he doesn't have the pedigree to do this, or he doesn't have the pedigree to do that. But good horse will do anything to do.
Yeah, and he took you to some pretty cool places. What was that ride like with Musket Man, going to all those big races?
It was kind of weird. I mean, like I said, that was one of the first horses I had for Eric. And basically, they never bothered me on how I trained them or who rode them or anything. So they left you alone, do your job. And when you're left alone, do your job, it's a lot easier. I picked out all the spots, and everything went to plan. And it was a good ride, but you know, like them all, it comes to an end.
Yeah, it certainly does. And you mentioned picking out all the spots. You made every right move with Musket Man, Derek, because you win the Illinois Derby. And then he goes to the Kentucky Derby and runs a huge third in that race, and then comes back with a third in the Preakness. Tell me about going through the Triple Crown and showing up at the Derby for the first time.
Actually, that was my first time in Kentucky. I never go to Churchill unless I had a legit horse to go to the Derby. And it was a fun run. It was a lot of fun. And he ran his race. So, you know, he showed up on the day that he was a legit horse. He beat... He actually should have been second. If you look at the race, it was Pioneer and Isle actually bashed into the horse on his inside and drove. I got beat ahead for second, and it was like, wow, there they go to Cole. Why didn't you call claim foul? He said, I didn't have a shot. They already had it official. But that's the Derby. You know, they don't like to have inquiries in the Derby. And, you know, but it was a good run.
Yeah, it was a tremendous run, and a tremendous run a couple weeks later in Baltimore as well. How about that one?
Yeah, like you said, he came back in Baltimore, and same thing. Of course, Rachel Alexander showed up, and she was a special filly, you know. She probably could have won the Derby if she'd run in it that year. Still don't know how that horse beat us all, but that was a Calvin Borrell effect at the time up the rail. 99 times out of 100, he'd have never got through.
No, that's true. Yeah, and boy, what a performance though! And to see what you did in that Triple Crown run, and then come back in the Breeders' Cup the next year, becoming your first Breeders' Cup starter with Musket Man. That had to be a huge thrill as well.
Yeah, looking back, I mean, it was I was more keen on the mile, but he's raised there again. He finished sixth. He didn't disgrace himself. I mean, you were winning against the legend, Zenyatta. And he ran a respectable race, but looking back, he should have been in the mile. He would have probably won the mile. But it's easy to say that now.
Yeah, it would have been nice if you were kind of maybe born a year later or a year before, because you had to hook Rachel and Zenyatta in those seasons, and that doesn't pan out too well usually.
Two of the greatest fillies of all. Of all time.
Yeah, no, that's boy, incredible story, and congrats on all that success with Musket Man. You also had another horse by the name of Schoolyard Dreams, who I remember, that was pretty good.
Yeah, he was a legit horse. I didn't give a lot of money for him either, and I bought him off a friend of mine in Ocala, Kenny Lejeune, and looked like he won the Tampa Derby. I wanted to go back to Illinois, but was powers that be made me go to New York against another great horse. But, you know, we took a shot, and he was never really the same after running against Escondrea.
Derek Ryan joining us on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton on the Horse Racing Radio Network. And as you can tell, Derek has had an awful lot of success. I mentioned all of the wins as we opened the program. He's been to the winner's circle his fair share of times, looking to get there even more. And Derek, I've often read that you have a bit of a unorthodox method of training horses, but it's not uncommon where you'll include, for example, a pint of Guinness poured into their feed every day. And you hear that a lot from Irish trainers.
Yeah, sometimes we do, sometimes we don't. I mean, I have a real nice filly right now, that Irish Jasper, and I work her for a lot. She's going to run in the test in a couple of weeks. But I always do her last work on the turf, and everyone wants to know, why are you working her on the turf? But like I tell them, I own most of her. I can do what I want with her. This is the way I prep her, you know. That's just the way I do it.
What does the Guinness do for horses when you put it in their feed?
They say it gives them an appetite. Supposedly, I mean, it's an old trick they used to do in Ireland, whether it works or not. It doesn't hurt to put it that way.
No, it certainly doesn't. And it's obviously worked out pretty darn well for you. Irish Jasper, here's a filly you mentioned being really, really nice. And she is. She won the Grade 3 Victory Ride Stakes a couple of weeks back. And she's pretty talented. Tell me a little bit about her.
Yeah, I bought her in Ocala private as well off another friend of mine for Dominic Brennan. And she's shown a lot of talent from day one. And of course, we dropped her in to cash a bet on her first time out, got away with it, and everything has been smooth sailing so far. Like I said, I pick all her spots, and she's going to go in the test in Saratoga on the 8th, and hopefully we get the job done there.
How much easier is it when you have owners that understand, hey, you're calling the shots, you're with the horse every day, you're the trainer, you make the decisions? How much easier is that for a horse trainer?
It's a lot easier, you know, when you're allowed to do your own thing, you know.
Do you have to sit down with new owners when you have new clients come in and say, hey, here's how it works, are you okay with the way I run my program?
Well, a lot of them, like I said, sometimes I've been told, I mean, a little blunt sometimes, I tell them the truth. You know, when you get a breeder or somebody sends you a horse and you tell him he's not very talented, they don't. But, you know, it's better. I think it's better, you know, the truth from the word go than someone telling you he's a stake horse, and 6 months down the road you find out he's a climber.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that's 100% right. Derek Ryan on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton on the Horse Racing Radio Network. So, Derek, how would you describe your training method or methodology?
It's not really that much different than anybody else. I do really like to work horses on the turf or run them on the turf. I'll run everything on the turf. The only horse I never got to run on it was Musket Man, and I always wanted to run him on it, but never got the shot.
How come? Why do you like that so much?
Just, you know, when you're on that three-year-old trail, you can't really come off it. And I was actually going to run him in his four-year-old comeback race and the five and a half in the turf, but we didn't get around to it.
Why do you like working horses so much on the grass?
Well, half it would be, it's like you running on the road and running in the grass. Sometimes when you run on the road, you come back and you're a little bit jarred up and you're a little bit sore from it. When you run on the grass, you're not. It's the same for a horse. When you run on a dirt track, it's, you know, it's a little bit stingier on them, and they get a little bit more jarred up from it, whereas on the grass, they don't.
Yeah.
You know, unless it's rock hard, then they will. But as a rule, I remember I got a horse from a trainer, an eight-year-old old stake horse, and a few years ago from a guy in New York, and the horse had made like 600,000. And I said to him, I said, why'd you never run this horse in the grass? He says, well, every trainer told me he didn't like it. I said, well, how did they know? And they said they worked him on it. I said, well, I'm running him on it. And I ran him. He was 40-1, and he got beat ahead. But he came out of the race so good when I ran him back, he excelled and win easy. You know, so that's just me. That's just my preference.
Yeah. Yeah, no, that's, and you know what? I mean, again, if you're honest with people up front, you let them know this is how I like to do things, this is my program, this is what you're getting into, I think that goes a long way. Are you the only member of your family, Derek, that's involved in the horse business?
Basically, yeah. Yeah, I got a brother who's a golf professional. Another one is in the golf business. He's like a greenskeeper, and a lot of my family are in the golf business.
Your brother's a professional golfer.
Yeah, I've got one brother. He's a club pro in Galway Bay back in Ireland.
Has he ever dabbled on the any kind of tour or the European tour or the PGA tour?
Yeah, a little bit on the Irish tour, a little bit. But it's, you know, there's so many great golfers out there, you know, same thing.
So he's a better golfer than you?
Oh, yeah.
Does he give you strokes when you play with him?
Yeah, he does, actually. My nephew. I got a nephew over there in Ireland. He's on the Irish team right now. He's a really good golfer as well. So it's my release from work, actually. That's what I'm getting ready to do very shortly.
Yeah, maybe the next...
chase the white ball.
The next Rory McIlroy, maybe, right?
Nah, wait. It's just it's a way to get out there and enjoy yourself and have a good time. And I enjoy it. It gets my mind off of work.
Are you a pretty good golfer?
I used to be good, not anymore. A hacker a little bit. But we can hold our own if there's a few dollars on the line.
I'm sure there is. So outside of golf, what other hobbies does Derek Ryan have?
That's it. Golf and horses and, you know, run around with my son. I got a 9-year-old, so.
Is he a golfer?
That's basically. He's a bit of taekwondo. We're trying to break him into it slowly, but he doesn't show a lot of interest in it right now.
You think he'll be a horse trainer?
No. Horse business is getting tougher and tougher by the year. It's changed a lot even in the last 5 years. I think we're going to have less racing and just bigger outfits. And, you know, the smaller guys, I think, are going to eventually be shoved out of the business. I mean, we're losing tracks left and right. What did we lose this year? Boston, Arlington looks like it's in bad shape. You know, it's just getting tougher and tougher.
If he came to you and he said he wanted to be a trainer, what would you tell him?
I'd have to give him a boot in the ass and say, get away from the business. It's very tough. Like I said, you know, there's only so many big clients out there. And it's a tough business. It's 7 days a week. You don't really get a lot of, you know. You know, it's tough to be in the horse business and have a family life and everything. It's just a really tough business.
Well, Derek, you're making it all work. You've had a lot of success, and I want to thank you for coming on the program here. Like all of our guests who appear on the show, you'll receive a gift courtesy of one of our sponsors. It's Flair Equine Nasal Strips. I'll send those out to you, and I'll look forward to seeing you here in the future. All the best moving forward, and hit them straight.
Okie doke. Thank you very much.
All right, Derek Ryan here on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton, and fun visit. You can tell that he's somebody that wants to do things his way. He's going to do things his way. And if you're an owner sending a horse to Derek Ryan, you got to kind of understand that. But he's up front. And I like that approach. He says, okay, here's how I do it. Here's what I'm going to do, what I expect to do. And if it fits you and it fits your philosophy, that's great. And trust me, there's a lot of owners that just want to go ahead and say, okay, you call the shots. I don't know anything about training a horse. You call the shots, and I'm just going to sit back and enjoy the ride. And he's gone on some really fun rides. That Musket Man story is pretty cool. Musket Man, a horse that didn't really have that flashy, derby, classic type of pedigree. But as you heard him say, good horses will perform. And he was a good horse. Purchased him as a two-year-old for $40,000 at the Timonium sales up in Maryland. And then, as you heard him say, later sold, but able to stay in his barn and go on that unbelievable run. Third in the Derby. Third in the 2009 Preakness behind Rachel Alexandra. And then coming back and running in the Breeders' Cup in 2010. But how about that luck? You draw two of the greatest fillies in the history of the sport in your generation. You have to face Rachel, and then you have to come back and you have to face Zenyatta. Unbelievable. Moose the Goose was the first horse that he ever won with after he struck out on his own in 1996. And it's been an uphill climb or a upward ascent for Derek Ryan since that time. Again, like all of our guests, he will receive a gift courtesy of Flair Equine Nasal Strips. And always fun to catch up with people like Darren and Derek and hear how this sport really does work. All right, don't forget you can join us every Wednesday night for Trainer Talk presented by Fasig Tipton, 6 to 7 Eastern. Tune in Thursday nights for the BristNet.com call-in show. Same time, 6 to 7 Eastern, Sirius 220, XM 206. And, of course, all those shows streaming on our website at horseracingradio.net. And on Fridays, the Express Bet Weekend Stakes Preview. Every Saturday, the Equine Forum Show, 8 to 10 a.m. Eastern. And, yeah, our race coverage, especially that Saturdays at Saratoga Series, getting ready to kick off this coming Saturday at the Spa. Should be a lot of fun. My thanks to Derek Ryan for being here on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton. Second half coming up next. Stay with us. It's all here for you on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
The Fasig Tipton Saratoga sale is quite simply number one. The number one ranked sale by percentage of grade one winners sold.
Holding off Lee as they come down to the finish. Constitution of the Dawn.
Number one by percentage of graded stakes winners sold.
Here's the wire, and it's a photo finish that goes to Tonalist.
Number one by percentage of stakes winners sold.
And it's Stella Wind, an absolutely scintillating performance today.
And the number one ranked sale by percentage of stakes horses sold, percentage of winners with earnings of more than $150,000 sold, and average earnings per starter sold. The Fasig Tipton Saratoga sale takes place August 10th and 11th in Saratoga Springs, New York, with more than 200 yearlings set to be offered, and will be followed by the Fasig Tipton New York bred sale on August 15th and 16th. Where will you be this August? Visit FasigTipton.com.
And they're off in New York. The premier state bred program in the United States. When you own a New York bred, your horse can run for more than $44 million in purses restricted to registered New York breds. And the New York program pays awards to breeders, owners, and stallion owners when their New York breds finish first, second, or third at New York tracks. We have the quality.
Day at the Spa, all the way.
You have the opportunity. New York breds, get with the program. The best program.
Attention horsemen, Kentucky Downs is proud to announce a record $7.5 million in purses and KTDF money offered at the 2015 race meeting beginning September 5th. Overnight races will offer $120,000 purses for maiden special weight and as much as $130,000 for allowance races, plus three new stakes races and the meet's signature Grade 3 Kentucky Turf Cup offering a $600,000 purse on September 12th. Visit
KentuckyDowns.com to download your 2015 condition book today.
Since 2006, the Permanently Disabled Jockeys Fund has provided critical financial assistance to some 60 riders who have sustained catastrophic on-track injuries. The lives of these former athletes who have given so much to the sport of horse racing have been changed forever. I'm Mike Pena, president of the Horse Racing Radio Network and proud supporter of the PDJF, and I ask you to join me in supporting this outstanding organization right now by texting the word jockey to 50555. You'll be credited with a $10 donation that can literally change the lives of those disabled riders who need it so much. It's quick, it's easy, and it's only $10. Who would think a simple $5 Exacta box would mean so much to so many? So let's all help make a huge difference in the lives of those riders who have given us so many great memories. Text the word jockey to 50555 today and visit pdjf.org to learn more. Message and data rates may apply. Terms mgive.org/chi.
The Breeders' Cup runs here.
Bayern, toast of New York, California Chrome. Bayern, toast of New York. Bayern has won it. Bayern got there by a head under Martin Garcia over toast of New York. It's untappable in front. Untappable the leader. Don't tell Sophia flying on the outside. Untappable gonna get there. Untappable has won it. Judy the Beauty sticks her neck out, goes for the wire. On the outside, Better Lucky's catching. Better Lucky, Judy the Beauty. Judy the Beauty, one and a head and eight thrillers. Main sequence finishing best of all. Late run from Twilight Eclipse. But it is main sequence to score. Main sequence is one and a head.
The Breeders' Cup, October 30th and 31st. Exclusively here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Presented by Cal Density. Go to horseracingradio.net for more information and to listen live.